Welcome to the Frontline Industry Podcast, where the best of the best executives from around the world share their leadership advice and insights, giving you practical tips and strategies that you can take and immediately implement in your teams and organizations to help you become the leader you want to be. On today's episode, Healing at Work, Part 1, I talk with Susan Schmidt-Winchester, CEO and founder of Healing at Work and former CHRO for Applied Materials and former CHRO for Rockwell Automation. Susan discusses being an adult survivor of a damaged past and how you can figure out if you are one too, overcoming broken relationships and addiction, how to deal with being emotionally triggered, and much more. Don't go anywhere. The Frontline Industry Podcast starts right now. Welcome to the Frontline Industry Podcast. My name is Joel, and joining me today, boy, I've been thinking about this conversation in advance for a week plus now. We have Susan Schmidt-Winchester. She's currently, with 1 week to go, senior HR advisor with Applied Materials, a Fortune 150 Silicon Valley company, and former SVP and Chief Human Resources Officer for Applied Materials as well before that. She was also the CHRO for Rockwell Automation, and she's also the CEO and founder of Healing at Work, something we'll talk a lot about today. She's got more than 36 years of experience in corporate HR, providing executive leadership in a ton of leadership roles, both in the U.S. and globally, and she continually looks to meet today's global business challenges with a lot of creativity in her creative organization and people strategies that engage people, support a dynamic, inclusive corporate culture, and enable company exceptional performance. Her passion is for teaching and inspiring executives. And I can tell you just from our conversation before this, as we got to know each other, I felt inspired by her. And I'm sure you will as well today. Her passion is also for leaders and professionals and helping them succeed by discovering greater self-acceptance, fulfillment, and joy at work and in life, and especially for those who come from dysfunctional childhoods, which unfortunately is a lot of us. And I think you'll hear a lot of wisdom from her in that regard today. She's the author of the book Healing at Work, A Guide to Using Career Conflicts to Overcome Your Past and Build the Future You Deserve with Martha I. Finney. And she's also a fellow at the National Academy for Human Resources, of Human Resources, the highest professional honor for leaders in HR. She serves as a board member for the HR Policy Association and on the executive committee of the Peer Roundtable for CHROs. She's chair, leadership advisory board of the Dean of Engineering, College of Engineering at the University of Michigan, and she's a member of the Society for Human Resources Management Executive Network. And if you are like me and you're like, gosh, I need to get to know this woman and hear what she's all about, you can find more information on her at healingatwork.com or find her at Susan Schmidt Winchester on LinkedIn. Wow, Susan, what a background. And I have been so excited about this. Welcome to the Frontline Industry Podcast.
Thank you, Joel. I've been really looking forward to this as well. And I listen to you talk and I think, no wonder I feel tired. Yeah, that's been a crazy but amazing career, and I am really grateful to be here with you today.
Well, I'm very grateful for it as well, and you're 1 week away. You're 1 week away from a major pivot in your life. How do you feel?
I feel energized. I feel grateful. it's going to be a whole new world, a world of really being able to focus a lot more of my energy on my purpose, which you talked about, teaching people self-acceptance to create a more joyful world through the Healing at Work that I'm doing. And just really looking forward to a whole new world of really freedom, time to do the things that I'm personally passionate about. Although I could not be more grateful for the career that I've been able to be a part of and the companies that I've had the privilege of serving. So yeah, I'm pretty jazzed up.
You've got such an incredible past, and you've done some, I mean, if you just look at it on paper and of course in the other way as well, just a very impressive resume. What's the thing you're most proud of though, in that 36 year career, when you like look back and go, boy, that was a capstone moment for me?
I think what I'm most proud of was really becoming conscious and really understanding how much my own dysfunctional past, my own dysfunctional childhood was showing up in ways at work every single day, in ways that were causing me to experience a variety of painful emotions. And, you know, what I sometimes say is that, you know, my career looks like it was an amazing career, but what most people don't know is that 30 of those 36 years, I was basically driving all my accomplishments because of my underlying belief that I wasn't good enough. And as I mentioned, this sort of realization that there, you can actually live a whole different career experience. That was a major revelation to me. Wow. You know, I didn't realize how hard I was on myself for so many years, never feeling like I measured up, constantly evaluating what I did that day or didn't do, giving myself a pretty low performance score, and then sadly turning to alcohol to try to take the edge off all those painful emotions, fear, anxiety, stress. And for me, what I'm most proud of is and I really credit God for this, but becoming aware and conscious of the connection between the patterns that I learned when I was growing up. And by the way, this isn't about blaming parents or anything like that. I think our parents do the best they can. But my dad had some issues with unpredictable rage. And so, you know, I never connected that experience to the stress that I was having in the workplace. Specifically, I felt like it was my responsibility for his anger. And so somewhere along the line, as a kid, I figured out that it was everybody else's job to determine my value. And my job was to be as perfect and as people-pleasing as possible. And that's a really broken belief system. And then the way that that transpired for me, especially in the workplace, but certainly when I was little too, was this trying to constantly please everybody, always striving to over-deliver, to overachieve. And that's an exhausting way of living a career. I always think now that I could have had those same accomplishments with all the misery that I suffered that was unconscious. And so what I'm most proud of is learning principles of understanding how to get off what I call the unconscious wounded career path, where I spent a lot of time, and actually learning that you can live the conscious healing career path, which I've been living for the last 6 years. And boy, oh boy, is it a totally different experience.
I'm fighting breaking down with you right now, because it's so powerful, the story you just shared. And I can't imagine a scenario that there's not people listening right now who are going, oh my gosh, that's me. Mm-hmm. But there also might be some people listening going, how do I know if that's me?
Mm-hmm.
And how would I even recognize that? What are the warning signs? And what would you say to someone like that?
Yeah, it's a really great question. I know I'm feeling emotional today too, probably all the emotions of my major life transition into a whole new world. And plus you create such a great space to have these conversations. I really, really appreciate it. So Martha and I, my amazing co-author, we weren't sure what to call ourselves, first of all. And, you know, I mean, if you grow up in a dysfunctional past, actually the research shows that nearly 2/3 of us experienced at least one significant event. Some people might call it a trauma, a major emotional wound, before the age of 18, 2/3 of us. Hmm. And 40% of us experienced two or more of what are called the adverse childhood experiences. These are 10 really significantly negative things that happen to kids when they're little. And so the fact is that many of us had experiences that weren't necessarily positive. But we weren't sure what to call ourselves because, you know, there are things out there in the world. ACOA, Adult Children of Alcoholics, is one group, which I was a member of that support group for many years. It's a wonderful organization. But we were really looking at ourselves through the lens of a broader bucket of dysfunction. And so we came up with our own acronym. So I'll explain the acronym, then I'll explain how you would know what are the symptoms of, you know, being a part of this group of us that's actually pretty high. So we call it ASDP, Adult Survivor of a Damaged Past. And in a nutshell, it simply means that today we are adults and that we don't often realize how much, you know, some of the things that we experienced are influencing us, and we're not always able to show up as our highest functioning adult self at work. I can say more about that if you want to explore that. Sure. The S is for survivor, which for me is a word of resilience and strength. And it recognizes that, you know, when we start to look at and own kind of, you know, different things that may have occurred, and, you know, there are lots of things, there are more than just the adverse childhood experiences, there are lots of things, bullying, discrimination, poverty, whatever. That we actually have amazing gifts and superpowers that come from that. and that we are, you know, often we're really good at managing stressful situations, chaotic situations. We tend to have a different perspective on compassion and empathy because of some of the things that we went through. But the S is a strength word. I love it. The D is for damaged. And what it really refers to is, you know, dysfunctional or damaged past. But more importantly, the fact that many of us are carrying damaging beliefs about ourselves that can be debilitating and can create a lot of spiraling down and a lot of super talented, overachieving perfectionists turning to unhealthy self-soothing habits. Becoming aware of the impact of that damaged belief system and how that's affecting us in our careers. And then the P is the past, which again is just acknowledging that lots of things may have happened to you and to me when we were little, and that we're often carrying a lot of patterns with us from the past. For me, it's people pleasing and perfectionism. For some people, they use anger to push people away, to try to create their own sense of safety, the bullies, the corporate bullies. Then there are also people who try to stay invisible, sort of the wallflower, off the radar, if you will, and not wanting to be noticed. You know, so those are all the things that can happen as a result of our past. And so how do you know if you're an ASDP? I think the easiest way for me to articulate it is that you realize that you're experiencing more emotions that are painful than emotions that are positive from your workplace experiences. So I talk a lot about workplace conflict as an opportunity for really getting clear on this, but workplace conflict, what Martha and I call bumper car moments, happen all the time at work. We're constantly crashing into each other emotionally. And, you know, so if you're an ASDP like me, when these experiences happen at work and we get triggered, this emotionally charged reaction, like, I can't believe Joel looked at me like that in the meeting. It was obvious he was judging me. Mm-hmm. So immediately my limiting belief of you're not good enough is reinforced. And I start to go into panic mode and reaction mode, which for me was that tap dancing, people pleasing, perfectionism. Okay, Joel, what do you need? What do you need? You know, is there a project that I should have been focused on? I mean, I'd always blame myself for whatever you were upset about. The other thing is that when we have these triggered moments at work, we ruminate about them. You know, we spend lots of time replaying what happened. Another bumper car moment for a lot of people is being skipped over for a promotion. That can be a hugely charged moment. Mm-hmm. Immediately feel unvalued. We immediately think and tell ourselves all kinds of stories about, you know, company doesn't value me. I need to leave. I need to go look for another job. But it's this ruminating, like, well, what could I have done differently? You know, should I have said something differently in the interview? I knew that so-and-so didn't like me. I know they don't think I'm smart enough. It's this internal conversation going on in our heads that's like, you know, monkeys jumping around in there. And we create all these assumptions and stories that fuel our emotions, the anxiety. For me, it was anxiety, worry, fear of getting in trouble. If I thought somebody was mad at me and I might get in trouble, that was another trigger. You know, so if you're experiencing this, what I feel like the unconscious wounded career path is like the spiral down into a miserable place. You're spending way too much time to the rethinking and replaying everything that you did or didn't do in the workplace, or everything that your colleague or your boss or whoever, your own direct report is doing. Our own direct reports can trigger us as much as our bosses can trigger us. So I think it's starting to notice when you're feeling those emotionally charged moments in the workplace, especially during these emotional crashes, these bumper car moments, which, by the way, the other person may not even realize they've crashed into you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and we don't always know. We may do something and be completely unaware of how much of a negative impact it had on somebody else. And then they come at us. We're like, whoa, what happened? It's unpredictable. You know, so those are a couple of the symptoms. There's a lot of internal dialogue, creating a lot of stories, beating yourself up, feeling worried, all the painful emotions, angry, sad, alone, abandoned, all those emotions. And then constantly going into old patterns to try to manage a safe environment, which can lead to workaholism, addiction, exhaustion, relationships with family and friends that are distant. And that's way too long of an answer, but that's my answer.
That's a really good one. I have a question I want to ask, and I'm trying to figure out, is it the right time to do it now? And I think sure. I just will. Think back to 7 years ago. So when you were still in your old version of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How would she be manifesting differently in this conversation right now?
Well, first of all, she wouldn't even be aware of these patterns that are playing out in her career every single day. She would be a very high achieving professional who had achieved some great success, but was constantly getting launched onto that spiral down. You know, if something went wrong in her mind at work, it was like sliding into, I call it SAW, stress, worry, stress, anxiety, and worry. That's what it was for me. Mm-hmm. It's different for other people. I was talking to somebody recently, and they were describing their every night, evening emotion as feeling the crushing weight of what he didn't do right that day. Crushing.
Wow.
And it's honestly, for me, it was like an elephant was sitting on my chest. Because when we're in that state, that unconscious, when I was in that unconscious state, to be specific, I was unaware of how desperate I was looking for other people to validate me. I was unaware of how much power I was giving away to other people. I was unaware of why my reactions were so strong, you know, having these kind of over the top emotional reactions. I was unaware that that's actually fueled by things that happened to us a long time ago, because the brain, the feeling part of the brainstem, that fight, flight, or freeze part of our brain, the amygdala specifically, has no memory of time. And so if something's happening to me at work, or if it was happening to me at work in the past, and it triggered an old memory of a fear, of anxiety, whatever, of something that happened to me in my relationship with my dad and other major authority figures, masculine women. I have a story of a boss who was extremely masculine in how she was a leader, and I was constantly triggered by her. And so what would be different then is I wouldn't have known all of the things that I actually own. I wouldn't have known how to manage the stories in my head, the assumptions that I'm making. I wouldn't have known not to take everything personally. I took everything personally. If something was going wrong at work, I assumed that it was going to hurt my reputation or my image. And I would constantly go, I was totally unconscious of how much those old, it was like an old record playing in my head every single day and hitting the same grooves every single day. And I was disconnected from that understanding. And so for me, it was this, you know, always looking like everything was great on the outside, but on the inside, I was really unhappy. I was sad. I was scared. You know, if something happened with a boss and I took it personally, I would spend, you know, I hate even admitting this. I had these names for how big of a trigger was it. IOD was an issue of the day. So I kind of process it and manage it and be okay by the next day. Right. IOW was, I'd spend a whole week worrying about it. IOM, a whole month consuming me, beating myself up. And then IOC, issue of a career where I felt like I was going to get fired. You know, and so I kind of named my levels of stress and anxiety related to what had happened. And I had some major bumper car crashes that sent me spiraling, and you know, I can tell you lots of stories. but yeah, that would have been me six, seven years ago. And I call it, Mark and I are very specific. It's healing at work. So it's a journey. I am not healed at work. I still get emotionally triggered. But the time that I spend in that deep well of misery is completely shortened. The amount of time that I spend directing all of my emotion and energy onto the other person, judging and blaming whatever it is that they did to me, that the amount of time that I spend wallowing in those painful experiences and giving away all my power to my own responsibility to determine my value and to realize everybody else, you know, 2/3 of us are dealing with these same issues. It's a lot of clarity on, you know, oh, this maybe helps me understand why this particular colleague of mine is doing what he or she is doing. So those are some big differences for me, being back on that unconscious wounded career path, now on the hot, on the conscious healing career path, is having the conscious awareness that when I get triggered emotionally to go, oh, it's a bumper car crash, Susan, an opportunity for personal growth. And I can start to unwind, like, why are you getting so triggered by this? Mm-hmm. And okay, yep, I'm feeling small. I'm feeling somebody did something that made me feel stupid. So there's a whole process I created called the Rapid Power Reclaim. It's really simple. I can walk you through it if you're interested.
Do it, yeah.
How to regain your power in those moments when you're feeling completely unrattled. And there are two. First, the Rapid Power Reclaim is a simple three-step process that you can do after the moment happens. I can also give you a technique for if you're in a meeting and it happens, a couple techniques as well if you get triggered. So the Rapid Power Reclaim, or the RPR, step number one. So when you're feeling triggered emotionally, like something happened, Joel, you're my boss and you were pretty hard on me about a project that I just gave you. So for me, that would be a huge bumper car crash. The first step is realizing this is an opportunity, right? So the first step is called create choice. And so the first thing I say to myself is, okay, I'm having a bumper car moment. All right. In order for me to have an elevated approach to how I'm going to respond, I have to create choice, which simply means I have to, before I can get into my prefrontal cortex of my brain and think logically and analytically and go into problem solving mode, I have to feel the emotions I'm feeling. We're all so used to stuffing all those emotions, ignoring them, pushing them down. But if your judgment on a project is causing me to feel insignificant or stupid or whatever, creating choice just simply means letting those emotions come up. And there are different ways to process emotion, right? Emotion is energy in motion. It's stored in our bodies. The book, The Body Keeps the Score, is a wonderful description of what I'm talking about. But before we can get into problem-solving mode, we got to figure out a way how to get the emotion and feel it. And the way to do it, and I learned this from my amazing coach, Celine DaCosta, is through sound, movement, or breath. And so there are different techniques. I'll give you a really simple one right now. Sound may just be finding a pillow somewhere and screaming into it and just getting it out of you. There's some really amazing techniques for doing emotional processing of yourself. I have a $5 plastic baseball bat. It's blue. I bought it from Amazon. And I will take that baseball bat and I will whack it on a couch or a chair or something. Movement and yelling, that's the sound and movement, is getting that emotion out of me. So maybe in this moment when you gave me this feedback on this project, I'm feeling like I can't do anything right. That's another limiting belief a lot of people have. So before I can come up in problem solving mode, I'll just go and let that emotion come up. I feel insignificant. I feel stupid. I feel small and yelling and then maybe physically doing something. One time I was doing this exercise and I started doing somersaults. It was the weirdest thing. I don't know where it came from. I started rolling around. I haven't done somersaults since I was a kid, but my body wanted to get it out of me. So that's step one, is creating choice. Because the thing is that when we're in that emotionally triggered response state, that fight, flight, or freeze, we have no choice. We go into the adrenaline warp. I've seen people get stuck in that adrenaline warp with fight. They go into anger and they had these overtop reactions to something that's just happened at work. It's why it's so important to get that emotion out. Once you've done that, and usually I feel better, I go, oh, okay. Celine often used the example of when a zebra is running from a lion, it's running as fast as it can. And then when they finally have eluded the lion, they're in a safe place, the zebras will shake their whole bodies. And it's kind of like that. It's like you're shaking off that emotion. So then you can go into step two, which is elevate action. So for me, unelevated action is perfectionism and people pleasing, right? Tap dancing, like, I got to go and prove to Joel now that I'm really a good employee. And I go into that people pleasing mode. Elevating action is saying you're going to take a different action. You're not going to go back into those old patterns. And so I may think to myself, what do I need to do to elevate my action in this case with Joel? Maybe my elevated action is to go in and have a conversation with him and maybe just test out my assumptions. Joel, you gave me that feedback on that project the other day. I took it to mean that you thought maybe I wasn't qualified to do this job. Is that true? That would be an elevated action, because then what you're doing is you're testing out and you're checking out the assumptions that you've been telling yourself. This happened to me one time. a woman that was working for me came to my office in tears. And I said, what's wrong? I had no idea that I'd caused a bumper car crash for her. And this, she was talking about a meeting that had happened 3 days before this moment when she came into my office in tears. She said, when we were in that meeting the other day, you said X. And I took it to mean that basically you didn't think that I was any good at my job. Mm-hmm. And so good on her for testing out the assumption, right, because she had completely misinterpreted what I'd said. I didn't even remember what I said. But when she told me, I said, oh my gosh, that is not at all what I meant. And then I went into an explanation of what I was talking about, what was the context for my statement. And, you know, she was very brave and courageous to do that. I was very impressed. And she elevated her action by, rather than, you know, it becoming an issue of the month, IOM, you know, which I would have done, she actually came and tested the assumption. I took it to mean that you didn't think I was qualified to do this job. And I said, it could not be further from the truth. And so that's an elevated action. I can give you more examples, but just thinking about, I'm not going to go into my old behavior patterns that are causing me, for me, that people-pleasing and perfectionism fueled my alcoholism. And I'm very grateful God intervened, and I will have been sober. It'll be 20 years on April 26, God willing. But that was the old pattern. So elevating action is, I'm not going to go into my old pattern. What can I do to elevate that action? And then once we do that, my step three is so important, and it's really grounded on the principles of neuroplasticity, the ability that we have to literally reshape the neural pathways in our brains, to begin thinking differently, to actually reshape our limiting beliefs, to reshape our old response systems and patterns. The third step is so critical, and I was so bad at it in the beginning, is celebrate and integrate.
This is the end of part one, but come back next week for an emotional part two when Susan describes how to navigate what she calls life's bumper car moments, dealing with insecurity and self-consciousness, how to find your worth and value as a person, living life on purpose, the power of self-acceptance, and so much more. I don't have time to tell it all here. Subscribe because you're not going to want to miss when this powerful second episode of Susan's comes out. You really, really don't want to miss it.